Good day, listeners. I'm really excited about our guest today, Michael Zakur, a retail and e-commerce expert. Michael is renowned for his influential work, including his best-selling books, China's Super Consumers and the New Retail Revolution, and is recognized as a top 100 retail influencer. In today's episode, we will dive into the transformative trends in the retail and e-commerce sectors. Michael brings a wealth of experience spanning two decades to our discussion, providing a comprehensive perspective on the evolution of retail and e-commerce. Our conversation will encompass a range of topics, starting with the current landscape of retail and e-commerce. Michael will share his expert insights on the digital transformation that has reshaped the industry and the future trajectory of e-commerce. Furthermore, we will explore the concept of immersive commerce and the role of in-store technology in enhancing consumer experiences. Post-COVID challenges and opportunities in the retail and e-commerce sectors will also be a focus, providing a nuanced understanding of the current market dynamics. Additionally, we will discuss the global retail environment, and specifically the approaches in China and Western markets to e-commerce, video, and live shopping. Michael's expertise in both regions offers a unique comparative analysis in retail and e-commerce strategies. A significant segment of our discussion will be dedicated to Michael's conceptualization of the Big Five in retail, an integration of online, offline, technology, supply chain, and content, and its crucial role in contemporary retail success. To conclude, Michael will share some personal stories and intriguing facts, offering a glimpse into his professional journey and experiences. Michael also discusses the importance of content, video, live shopping, and the integration between commerce and media that is reshaping the industry. So let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Eitan. Very well. Thanks for having me on today.
Great, Michael. You are a lot of years in the retail and e-commerce business. You're a top 100 retail influencer for Rethink Retail, author of two books, bestsellers actually on Amazon and Wiley, right? China Super Consumers and the New Retail Revolution. Maybe you have like a probably two decades of perspective of what's going on in retail and e-commerce. What do you see now happening in the market that is really different and, you know, reshaping the industry?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing today from a macro perspective is we've all been through now, you know, over the last 20 years, the process of digital transformation. Certainly retail has been digitally transformed. E-commerce had a lot to do with that. But every aspect of doing business globally as an enterprise or a startup, how you go to market, how do you market yourself, from, you know, research and development through the store shelf, through reverse logistics, everything's been digitized. So we've gone through that transformation. And part of that transformation was the disruption and changes that e-commerce and digital commerce forced upon the wider retail environment. Mm-hmm. I think what we've seen now is retail is going through another transformation. But in this case, I think it's more that e-commerce itself is being disrupted and transformed, much in the way that e-commerce disrupted and transformed the wider retail industry over the last 20 years. That's really key.
Wow. So what do you see now happening in retail? What are the major transformations?
So, I mean, we can look at it. And by the way, I want to be clear about when we talk about retail, when I use the term retail, I mean any environment, channel, or consumer touch point where there's an opportunity to exchange goods and services for money, right? Okay. Selling one-to-one. So to me, anything that's not wholesale is retail. You know, we talk so much about direct-to-consumer. Direct-to-consumer was a new concept for e-commerce a decade ago, but any brand that has a store that's mono brand, you're selling direct-to-consumer, right? So it's not as new a phenomenon as people think it is, right? And so I think, you know, we have to be clear that over the last decade, a lot of people have used the terms retail and store, physical store, interchangeably. And they're not the same thing. So we had all this talk in the last decade about the retail apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And there was no retail apocalypse. In fact, it was quite the opposite. Yes, were tens of thousands of physical stores around the world closing? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. But at the same time, retail became everywhere. It became ubiquitous, right? So now you've had two traditional channels, online and a physical store, turn into 12 or 15 channels, right? So now influencers are retailers. Shoppable video, you're a retailer. Mm-hmm. There are 10 different physical store formats. There's social commerce and down the line. So we want to be clear that what we've really seen, I think, is a retail renaissance, certainly non-apocalypse. And part of that transformation was, yes, a lot of the old, boring, middle of the market, underperforming retail chains that didn't see or embrace the future went the way of the dinosaurs. Okay, so what's happening now? In particular, I think there are two things. One, we're seeing in-store tech really rise and make the experience of being in a store better. And then I also think we're seeing a transformation in e-commerce itself. Mm-hmm. And this transformation, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention. This transformation is coming about simply due to the fact that shopping online, conducting e-commerce as a consumer has not changed much in the last decade, right? So billions and trillions of dollars that have gone into digital commerce and consumer experience and, well, you know, most of that money has got into the digital advertising industrial complex, but that's a whole other subject. But what's the bottom line? You still kind of buy online the way you did 10 years ago. It's a flat, two-dimensional screen. You scroll, click on a picture, scroll, click on a product description, scroll, maybe put something in your cart, and maybe check out with it, right? Yeah. So after all this time, all this money, all this creativity, this latent creativity, e-commerce hasn't changed much.
And conversion rates didn't change as much as well.
Exactly. And so none of that has improved conversion rates, right?
Yes.
You're still celebrating with a bottle of champagne if you hit a 2.3% conversion rate on your website. And by the way, you know, cart abandonment rates are still 70%. And we can, you know, account for the fact that some people use their cart as a bookmark system. Mm-hmm. We get that.
Like favorites, but, right?
Yeah. Right. My favorites is a form. But even taking that into account, abandonment rates should not be 70%, right? If every physical store worked off the principle that only 3 or 2.5 of out of every 10 people walk through the doors bought something, you go out of business very quickly. Sure. And so how does this show up? It shows up in the economics of e-commerce. The cost of consumer acquisition is higher than ever. The cost of logistics, fulfillment, reverse logistics, it makes it very hard, whether you're a D2C company, a startup, an established brand, an established retailer, it makes profitability in e-commerce very difficult.
Yeah.
So those are what are forcing the change in e-commerce to evolve from e-commerce into immersive commerce.
Yes. Now, that's a very, very interesting topic. But before we dive into this topic, let's spend a few more minutes on this online versus offline. Because what we see in China, for example, is I think it surpassed digital. So most of the transactions are happening online. Where in the US, in some industry, it's even less than 20% of, let's say in the furniture industry or other this more of a mature industry, more than 80% of the sales are happening offline. So you talk about renaissance of retail, right? So post-COVID, I mean, during COVID, obviously, the explosive of e-commerce transactions, those transactions are keep growing, right? Every year, even post-COVID pandemic era. But then again, it's not increasing the share overall retail businesses, right? So people like the physical interaction, I believe, like to go to store, they like to make the purchase locally. So how do you see those differences? Now, I know you have a lot of China background. We'll talk about it as well. But do you see e-commerce versus overall retail businesses growing? or do you see any dramatic change versus China? Few more pieces of information. We see latest announcement from Costco closing a third of their locations in the US. So they have probably like 500 location, closing more than 150 location. It's very difficult to run such a business, right, with such a low margin.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, I've spent more than 20 years doing business in Asia, in China in particular. I was living in China when Alibaba introduced Taobao, which was China's first e-commerce. And you said I had, you know, at the beginning, more than 20 years of experience. To date myself, I have no choice, but I've actually got 30 years. So I started in digital commerce, e-commerce, internet technologies in 1994. So exactly 30 years in the industry. So, you know, I was literally on the front lines of Web 1.0 and e-commerce 1.0 in the U.S. And then when I was living in China, I was there for Web 1.0 and e-commerce 1.0 in China, which has given me an incredible perspective to see how the two largest economies in the world developed their digital commerce and retail businesses over the last 30 years. The big takeaway was China embraced the integration of online and offline fully and completely years and years ahead of the West, number one. And number two, China, as you said, in some categories, you know, digital accounts are anywhere between 40 and 70% of purchases. And so why is that? What was the difference? Listen, there were some things that China had, ironically, what helped there was not what China had going for it. It was what China didn't have, right? So if we go back to the early 2000s before the e-commerce boom in China, most people didn't own, a phone, a smartphone. The traditional retail infrastructure was stuck in the 18th century. And so, you know, banking, you know, they didn't have traditional banking the way we did. You know, people were at that time, I remember in 2004, watching people go into a car dealership and pay for a new car with a duffel bag full of cash. So what did that mean? It means almost really serendipitously at the same time, digital banking, digital payments, smartphones, and the lack of retail infrastructure came together and created a fresh slate for digital first to be the path to the future. And then the giants like Alibaba and JD and others initially really perfected how to integrate online, offline technology, supply chain, and content to create a total ecosystem, a total retail services and consumption ecosystem. And so that is why in 2019, my book was published, The New Retail, Born in China, Going Global. What I saw was the future of retail and e-commerce for the rest of the world based on what I was seeing, experiencing, and doing in China. And so that book was full of predictions that at the time nobody took seriously, talking about why QR codes would take over the world, talking about why the major Western retailers would create the new retail model and integrate online, offline tech, content, supply chain. We could go on and on, and we look back after 5 years, and you know, I've had most people tell me probably 80% of what I said would happen in that book has come to fruition. And again, I you know, I don't claim I have any special knowledge or I'm special in any way. I was just reporting on what I was seeing, and saying to people, this is what's coming.
Amazing. Amazing. And I think the US is really fragmented, right? I mean, there are so many different communities. You have the YouTube community and the Facebook and the Instagram and then the TikTok and Twitch and right. The marketplaces, it's very difficult for a marketeer to put enough resources on any of them. Right. I see right now that during this era, people are going back to the basics and trying to understand where are the strong points, Correct. In terms of SKUs, but also markets and trying to make the strong stronger. And in this environment where you know, retailers, brands are going, diving into the details of everything that they do internally, right? They must, whether they do it by themselves or through an external help, which you provide as well, right? So let's talk about the key differentiators, right? I know you speak a lot about immersive experiences. Mm. So what do you mean by that?
So the way I define immersive commerce, and I differentiate that from immersive experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Building immersive experiences is part of the road that's going to take you to the destination, right? Ultimately, what we mean by immersive commerce is, and by the way, and this holds true as much for digital commerce as it does in physical store, okay? Okay. We'll circle okay. back to that. But essentially, okay. what we're saying is, let's start on the screen. As we said, right now, buying online is still flat, two-dimensional, scroll, click, scroll, click. With very few exceptions, it's not immersive, it's not experiential, and here's the worst part of all, it's not fun.
It's not fun. Hey, there are no surprises, right? You know what you're going to get when you keep
There's
scrolling.
There's no surprises.
Right?
I mean, you know, I'm old enough to remember that shopping is supposed to be fun. Yeah. You know, and you know, whether it was going to the mall with friends or going, you know, a woman going with her girlfriend to the local department store and having lunch at the in-store cafe and shopping and socializing and gossiping. Or walking into something like the Lego store, which today, right, they, you want a good example of who does yes. great immersive commerce, both experience. In-store and online,
yeah.
right? But so with most e-commerce, I'd say 85 to 90%, there's no fun involved. So as a marketer, as a manufacturer, as a brand, as a retailer, we have to ask ourselves, how can I make this social, fun, immersive, experiential,
wow.
right? And so what's happened now is a number of technologies have emerged and they've rapidly gone down in price very quickly mm-hmm. that can allow you to make your online shopping experience much more immersive. So what do we say some of these elements are? We're talking about the ability to do 3D product images, mm-hmm. right? What's cooler? Looking at a flat two-dimensional picture or clicking on it and being able to manipulate it, turn it around, see it on all sides, and then click through one by one. I want to see this person, green, blue, yellow, all in mm-hmm. one, right? Okay, yeah. Well, everybody would want that, but why didn't we have it before? Because adding all of that bandwidth to your website would mean it would take 10 seconds to load mm-hmm. And you'd lose 90% of your clicks just while they're waiting for it to load. Well, yeah. guess what? Now there are companies out there who through AI and powerful computing are able to shrink that 3D picture size down to the bandwidth of a static traditional picture. So that's one example. Other examples are live streaming commerce, shoppable video, you know, quizzes, gaming, yeah. You know, treasure hunts, gamification. And by the way, a lot of these things that I'm mentioning here are not new in 2024. They've been around for a while, but they haven't been embraced. They haven't been embraced by people selling online.
So this is probably right? because of it, they were like too high in terms of cost and required a lot of resources for the website to handle, right? Like
I think some of it was perceived cost rather than mm-hmm. actual. I think some of it was the fear that, if I start doing this, you know, as we say in the computing world, I'd have to do a rip and replace
yeah.
that. I have to yank out my tech stack and replace it with something new and revolutionary. I think that's certainly, you know, has been a concern, in addition to price. And some
of
it is
the case,
just,
right? It's not the case.
It's not the case. And some of it is just pure lack of imagination
yeah.
and the willingness to embrace the new. I mean, you know, all the big news in retail the last 2 weeks is, you know, Macy's closing another 150 stores and they're going to mm-hmm. shrink store sizes. And listen, at the end of the day, not just Macy's, but a lot of the legacy retailers, they ended up where they were because they just refused to embrace the new.
Yeah.
Too many vested interests, too many stakeholders with something to lose, and you end up, frozen in time.
Yeah.
But coming back to, immersive commerce, it's all there now. And so what we do and what we talk about with people is really kind of taking a step back and assessing where you are on a digital commerce maturity index. Where are you on an immersive commerce index? And really taking, a hard look in the mirror and saying, where are we? Where should we be? And how do we get there?
Yes. But hey, Michael, remember, in the pandemic era, everything worked, right? You didn't have to reinvent, innovate, just increase the product lines, increase SKUs. I mean, everything worked, but now we're in different ecosystem, right? Different environment. Some of them see this as an opportunity to innovate. Some of them, are afraid to innovate because maybe it's a too bold, right, decision they need to take. And as you said, they don't have to re-platform the whole thing, right? They can do a migration of things, implement step by step, test. I mean, what's the price of improving conversion by 0.1%, right?
Right.
How can you measure that? I mean, these are the real alternative costs for such an innovation and such things. So definitely we see the live shopping is getting a lot of traction in the US. Probably is going to be not the same as in China because we understand that the numbers, the GMV volumes are completely on a different scale. But still, it's indeed becoming an important strategy or marketing element in most of the brand and retailers. So it's definitely on the right direction and making things shoppable again, not just on the small device, but also on the big screen. In a cookieless world where just the retailers are able to provide you first party data, so retail media and CTVs, right? Amazon Prime advertising packages and Netflix advertising packages, QR code, everything that you've been discussing a long time ago on our taking shape. And I think 2024 is going to be an amazing year for innovation and new things that are coming into the picture. But before innovation and immersive, you talk a lot about the big five, right? Which is kind of probably the foundation of any infrastructure. You want to talk more about that?
Yeah. And just, one point, and I'll come to that. You're talking about the size of the live streaming market in China.
Yeah.
Last year, it was $650 billion, billion worth of merchandise, which is just unimaginable in scale. So if we were looking at the U.S. market, we don't ever, will never, never get to that level in any Western market,
sure,
right? But let's just say if we could get to 25 to 30% of that number, what kind of opportunity that presents for brands and retailers. Yes. And by the way, the notion that live streaming and live video in the U.S. is in the infant stage, it's not. I mean, live streaming is already about a $25 billion business in the U.S. So we're not starting from scratch right now.
Yep.
So if we get to 30% of that $650 billion, all right, now we're talking, $150 billion in the next couple of years. So,
yes.
So when you talk about the big five, right, the context for understanding the big five is that retail takes place in three types of silos today. Three kind of, if you put it, mega paradigms. The first one is habitats, right? So what we used to call channels, we call habitats. Because if you're working to build an ecosystem, you're not building channels in an ecosystem. You're recognizing there are different habitats to play in. Okay. Mm-hmm. And every habitat has its own climate, its own creatures, its own, natural processes. And that's important to understand, for a marketer. So the first one is habitats. And we define that by saying there are physical habitats and digital habitats. And you need to understand what all of the available habitats are for you to have a selling action, right? Or consumer action. That's number one. So it could be everything from a big box superstore like Walmart to a digital D2C startup to, anything in between. So you say to yourself, what's available to me and ideal for me from a habitat point of view? That's number one. Number two is what we call ecosystems and marketplaces. They're not the same thing. A lot of the big ecosystems started out as marketplaces like Amazon. Mm-hmm. A lot of the ecosystems started out as traditional retailers like Target and Walmart and Home Depot. But the difference is once you move from being a marketplace to an ecosystem, you do that by integrating the big five. So I'll come back to that one. But we can recognize for now that, you know, places like Chewy for dogs and Zappos for shoes, those are marketplaces, right? Mm-hmm. But Amazon and Walmart and Target and Alibaba are ecosystems.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the final one is the one that people probably know the least about, but I think could really be a game changer in the future, is what we call P-commerce, platform commerce. And we define that as a community that was built to incredible scale, that when the community was being built, had no concept of integrating commerce or retail into it, then discovered, wow, we should probably integrate retail.
At a later
commerce.
Stage. Yeah. Hmm? At a later stage, they discovered smart to integrate commerce, right?
Yeah. Right. So if you look at Netflix is a community of hundreds of millions of people who go there for entertainment. We look at Twitch, which is a platform for gaming. If we look at Roblox, YouTube, Minecraft, well, Minecraft, you go to all these platforms and you say, what are the possibilities for conducting commerce within these platforms?
Yeah.
And I think that if you're going to look where exponential growth is going to come from in the next 10 years, it's going to come from some combination of platforms and live video, right? That's the future. Okay. So we accept that there are these three paradigms. You've got habitats, you've got ecosystems and marketplaces, and you've got platform commerce. Okay. So if you're a brand, a retailer, a marketer, a manufacturer, where do you start? You start with the concept of the new retail model. And the new retail model is where the big five come in. How do you integrate online, offline, technology, supply chain, and content together? And how do you leverage the power of each of those elements against each other? Because you will have a very hard time being a profitable retailer or profitable D2C or a profitable e-commerce company without integrating, right? So the antidote to low margins and low profitability rates in both environments is the integration of those. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Step two, once you've been able to do that, right, then you start thinking about the term unified commerce, right? And so unified commerce is still a relatively new term to most people. I started writing about unified commerce 7.5 years ago, and I've taken a lot of flack and arrows and heat from the industry, from people who just don't understand what unified commerce is. So let me be clear for your audience. The most common term in the industry is omnichannel. Omnichannel strategy, omnichannel operations, omnichannel. Okay. The question I have is, what is the difference between multi-channel and omni-channel? Most people don't have a answer for that because the answer is, instead of one or two, you're selling through multiple channels. Okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. And that's an important step. And we can accept that, you know, a company who was only D2C starts selling wholesale to Walmart, like Harry's Razors. Great. Yes. You're multi-channel. Okay. The real trick is how do you integrate all of your consumer-facing habitats together with all of your consumer-facing marketing channels and then put that together and create a unified data, unified tech, unified seamless experience for your consumers?
Yeah.
That's the difference between unified commerce and omnichannel.
Interesting.
And then finally...
Go ahead. No, go ahead. It's okay.
I was saying, and then that's where, and then immersive commerce rides that wave of the new retail model and unified commerce to say, how can I use immersive experiences to be the connective tissue in my unified commerce world? How can I use immersive tools and technologies and habitats to increase conversion, to increase AOV, to ensure LTV, and how to use that to lower my cost of consumer acquisition? And that's where the immersive. So it kind of flows from new retail to unified commerce to immersive commerce. And if you look at the companies who are doing the best out there today, to one degree or another, they've adopted this philosophy. And as you said later, and I'll let you go from here, but I don't want anybody listening to think that this is something you do in a month or 3 months or even a year. It's something you build incrementally. You don't have to implement everything at once. You don't have to rip and replace your tech. What we're talking about instead of rip and replace is digital enablement. Take the tools you have and enable them to do the things that they're really capable of and add in layers where you need it.
Yes. So most of the businesses, right, retailers, brands, they operate in silos, right? You have an expertise on supply chain. You have an expertise on marketing, right? You have expertise on operation, and they have their own tools and they have their way of doing things. There is a term, you know, it's called said silos, right?
Yeah.
So what you're saying, we need to move to a unified architecture where data has been shared. Is like a broader overview of everything that happens back end to front end, correct? This is one layer.
Absolutely. It's unified thinking.
Yeah.
Unified direction, unified operations, unified strategy, right? All of that's got to come before unifying the commercial touch points, before unifying your marketing. You know, you've got to get the mindset first, yes. Right?
And
after that, anything's possible.
And in this process, let's call it digital transformation 2.0, whatever, obviously implementing AI, cost reduction processes, looking at your staffing and the entire processes all together, right? It's also probably cultural change. Once you have that in place, you can then build the foundation for more immersive, video-based, shoppable, like interactive type of like future-proof e-commerce storefronts and performances, right? And KPIs to take it to the next level.
Yeah, but I also want to be clear that it doesn't have to be a purely linear path.
Yes.
Meaning if it takes some time, you know, to build up the buy-in from your leadership, that doesn't mean you can't implement shoppable video or 3D or AI. Like those are things that you can implement as you're building the journey. For sure. What I can tell you is, you know, we've worked with a large, significant number of Fortune 1000 retail brand and CPG companies over the last 5 years. And we've literally seen magic happen when our recommendation to make sure something as simple as put your IT, your sales, and your marketing people in the same room twice a week.
Wow. Yeah.
And that sounds simple on the surface. You may or may not be surprised, or the audience may or may not be surprised at how rarely that happens.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's things like that. And so, you know, creating a position that didn't exist at the company, you know, whether it's a CDO or, you know, just allowing for, like I said, better digital enablement. Mm-hmm. We've seen the results, right? We know this works. This isn't theoretical. We've done this for dozens of major companies.
Yes. Yes. And those companies came to you because they've identified a specific problem, or they said, hey, come over, we have issues, margin going down, COGS is going up or whatever, please audit and help us. Or they usually come with a specific issue, please work it out. Or what is the best, you know, way for you to interact, you know, with those companies?
Yeah, it usually develops in all of those ways, actually. Okay. So there will be instances where, you know, they'll bring us in and say, look, you know, our profitability in e-commerce is down X amount. Our traffic is down. Our conversions are down. come in and help us figure out what's wrong here. Is it the way we're marketing? Is it the collateral we're using? Is it what, you know, fix the problem? And then usually, you know, we go in there and we can work out what section is working or not working in there. But what you tend to find out, right? Again, it's an ecosystem. And if one part of the ecosystem is unhealthy, it affects the rest of the ecosystem. And yeah. So that's when it can turn into, oh, so this bone is connected to that bone, is connected to that bone, like our bodies. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need an audit of everything that we're doing, from R&D to supply chain to marketing to sales, because, you know, the weakest link in the chain is going to break everything. So that it'll come about that way. Often it'll come about with companies coming to us and saying, look, we're launching a new product or a new product line. We want to do it on a marketplace or several marketplaces. How do we figure out the right habitat strategy for marketplaces, D2C, what we're doing in the stores? A lot of it, you know, generates itself from that perspective. And then others are just intrigued by the idea of new retail and immersive commerce and want to learn more about how to apply that to their business overall.
Yes, yes, very, very interesting. Michael, the B2B, are there any specific nuances, or is just another, you know, hemisphere? Or how do you see B2B here in all these?
So accounting for the fact that B2C e-commerce is a very mature, rapidly changing, but very mature industry, even accounting for that, B2B e-commerce will grow 4 to 5x faster than B2C commerce in the next 4 years. Global. Doesn't matter where
it's much bigger in GMV volumes than D2C.
And the GMV, obviously,
dramatically.
I mean, you know, if you're moving 5 pallets of computers through a B2B portal, you'd have to sell a whole lot of handbags to get to the GMV of those pallets, right? So, you know, even GMV aside, it's where the majority of the growth in digital commerce is coming from. That's number one. Number two, what's fascinating, we've done a lot of research on this internally in my shop, around the idea of, to your point, how does B2C and B2D, how are they different from each other? And what's the nuance in B2B? And there were two takeaways. And the first one is probably the most important. What we found is, you know, if you go back 10 years, B2B e-commerce, you know, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, was adopting B2C technologies and methodologies an average of a year to 3 years after it was debuted in B2C. What we're finding now is those methodologies, tools, technologies are being adopted in 3 to 9 months after they're well established. So that's number one.
Wow.
So why is that? I think a part of it is, look, the people who are now making buying decisions, purchasing decisions, building relationships with vendors, these are people now who are between, let's say, you know, 27 and 50 years old. We've grown up with the expectation that our lives are digitally transformed.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started out a long time ago in China, one of the things I was doing was I was manufacturing automotive aftermarket products. And I'd come back to the States and drive around North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, meeting with all the buyers and, you know, taking them out for dinner and drinks. And that's how it worked, right? And
nice.
No. The buyers at O'Reilly's Auto Parts don't want to go to Las Vegas with you anymore. They want to log in, get their business done, and log off.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, accounts for some of this adoption of B2C stuff in general.
Nice. Michael, what do you see in the market for 2024 in terms of challenges and opportunities for retailers and brands?
Yeah, I think the challenge for retailers and brands has two parts. One of them is a continuation of the challenge that's been in place for the last couple of years. You know, you talked at the top about you know, the post-pandemic when, look, it didn't matter really what you were doing. It was just get more stuff online and, yes.
More.
And now where did that leave a lot of companies with, you know, incredibly high amounts of inventory, low sell-through rates, you know, increased CapEx and OpEx and right? So I think that is still going to be an issue for a lot of retailers and brands to deal with. And that goes hand in hand with global supply chain disruptions and what we're seeing in the Red Sea and the drought in the Panama Canal. You know, there's going to be a lot of, I think, supply chain and logistics disruption that'll continue. But these things, you know, if you're well prepared, can be worked out. I think the other big issue is the pace at which consumers are changing their habits and their journeys. I think a lot of brands and retailers are still far too stuck on the concept of top of funnel, bottom funnel for marketing and sales. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say top to bottom funnel is irrelevant to marketing and sales. I'm just saying it's not as relevant, and that there are other paths the consumer journey takes now that many marketers have no idea they happen. And so I think, you know, finding those alternative consumer journeys, keeping up with the fast changing pace of, you know, consumer taste. And then, like I said, if most brands and retailers don't take action soon, you're going to see a further consolidation of purchases in a handful of companies that's going to hurt everyone who's not one of those seven or eight big companies.
Yes. Yes. I mean, companies realize that, you know, cash flow, which they aggregated, accumulated from the pandemic, is not really a free cash flow they can use, right? It's mostly sunk into buying in additional inventory and it's quite challenging financially. Some of the opportunities that you see, or maybe we talked about that.
I think there's opportunity in everything we talked about today.
Sure.
You know, I think one great opportunity is to sit back and say, how do I lower my cost of acquisition and increase my my traffic, my conversion, my AOV, and my LTV? And the answer is there are tools, technologies, methodologies, and strategies now that are there to do that. So I think that's one opportunity. And like I said, I think the other opportunity is twofold. Like what we talk a lot about with our clients is one, how do you adjust to a world of ecosystems? And how do you figure out where you can play best in those ecosystems? Mm-hmm. How do you look at Amazon? Yeah. How do you look at marketplaces? How do you look at Walmart and say, how can I leverage those ecosystems for my gain while at the same time looking inward and saying, how can I simultaneously build myself my own scaled mini version of an ecosystem? I think that's a huge opportunity that's untapped.
Michael, you've done so much in your career. You've been an executive, an investor, a consultant. You do so much. What are you proud of in your career?
I'd say I'm most proud of that not everything has gone to plan in my career. And so two things, the ability to quickly get up off the ground and say, what's next? Without lingering too much on what went wrong.
Nice.
I'd say that's one. Two, there are probably three or four times when I was just pure lucky to land in a place in time that I couldn't have possibly planned. But to make something of landing in that time an opportunity.
Yes.
So whether it was, you know, getting into the internet world in the mid-90s or landing in China in the early 2000s or, you know, ending up in a lot of supply chain work in the 2010s. So I think those are the two things I'm most proud of. And the final one would be just always 30 years of unwavering integrity and helping other companies do better.
Nice.
Probably number one.
Great, great. So thank you for sharing that. And Michael, we're in the fun fact part of the episode.
Okay. I don't know if I'm a very fun guy, Etan. I don't know. But fun
try,
fact.
Try hard, please. That's your chance.
let's see. I have spent time with some very interesting cultural figures. I have danced with Richard Gere's wife. Wow. I have hung out with Bono from U2. And for your audience members who are a little bit older, they may remember the Woody Allen film Zelig. And Zelig was a character who always seemed to show up if something important in politics or culture, there was Zelig always in the background
in the
somewhere.
Background, yeah.
So my mother called me the New Jersey Zelig because I always seemed to show up wherever the action and the celebrities and the parties were.
Hey, these are two experiences that are not common, so you're lucky. You're a lucky man.
And I love to fish. And fishing is my passion. That's the other one. Fishing,
that's the other passion.
Saltwater, deep water, freshwater. I love to fish.
Great, great. Hope to try it, you know, sometime together. Michael, thank you so much. Anything else you want to add?
No, I just want to say thank you for you giving me the time to come on with you. And thanks to the audience for listening to us.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was a pleasure having you here.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.